Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We know that coronavirus will not overcome us. As dark as death can be, particularly for those suffering with grief, light and life are greater. May the living flame of the Easter hope be a steady guide as we face the future.
Hi there, you're listening to Royals. It's the only podcast that goes behind the walls of Buckingham Palace. I'm your host for today, Zoe Burrell, and I'm a writer about all things royal at New Idea Magazine.
And I'm Angela Mollard. I'm a journalist, commentator, author, and royal expert.
And on today's show, we're going to be chatting all about the good friend that revealed Harry is finding life challenging.
That's right, Zoe. We're also going to talk about Meghan and Harry's Australian snub.
Plus, Beatrice's secret wedding hopes.
And then this lovely last one, Camilla shares something special with friends. I had to add that one. We'll get to it and I'll tell you why.
Lots to talk about, as always.
That's right. And starting off yet again with Harry and Meghan. I mean, they've dipped out of the royal family, haven't they, Zoe? But they still seem to be making headlines. I just don't think they can do anything right at the moment. But anyway, let's talk about it.
Exactly, yes. Well, one of his good friends just gave a very revealing interview. What can you tell us about it?
That's right, Zoe. And this is extraordinary because this is the first real insight post-Megxit that we have got into Meghan and Harry's life. They're obviously very close. They don't talk about it. But Dr. Jane Goodall, the primatologist, who is a very good friend of Harry's. In fact, she was one of the first people to ever hold Archie. Apparently, she was visiting them and Meghan came in. She was having a chat with Harry. Meghan came in with Archie and he was very sleepy. And according to Dr. Goodall, she sort of reached out for Archie and held him and tried to teach him the royal wave. And Harry said, no, he's not going to have to live that kind of life. So look, what I love about Jane Goodall is she doesn't tiptoe around things. She tells it like it is. And she has absolutely come out with some blinders. She's done an interview with the Radio Times to promote a new documentary that she's doing. But the stuff that's being picked up is really about her friendship with Harry and Meghan. What she's come out and said is that she has said that he is finding life in Los Angeles challenging. She said, I don't know how his career is going to map out, but yes, I've been in touch, though I think he's finding life a bit challenging right now. Now, of course, she could be referring to coronavirus and the fact they're locked down, but I think that it's deliberately vague. I think it suggests that actually, the life that they've chosen for themselves, the fact they've broken away from the royal family at a time when the rest of the royal family are possibly, arguably, more purposeful and necessary than ever. It's very difficult for Harry. His whole purpose in life was to serve. He was dutiful. I mean, he did it in his particular way with great humour and innovation. But the fact that he doesn't have that purpose at the centre of his life, I think, would be incredibly challenging. He's also in an area, I mean, like the rest of us, nobody can really see their friends, but he's not even in the same country as his friends. You know, he's on a different time zone. He's there with his wife. He doesn't have established connections. She's trying to get back to work. So I think Dr. Jane Goodall's insight is absolutely fascinating. She goes on, obviously, to talk about a lot of other things with respect to their friendship. But that one line, I think, speaks volumes and will be widely picked up. I mean, remember that that Harry interviewed her for British Vogue magazine when the issue that Meghan guest edited last September. And this is the interview that they did where he talked about that he only wanted two children maximum and how the environmental impact was terrifying. So they have a really established friendship there. Is she speaking out of turn? Look, I think she has the benefit of being 86 and you're allowed to do what you like when you get to that age. I'm not sure Harry would want her to have said some of the things he's said, because she's also mentioned that he is going to give up hunting.
Now, I did enjoy reading about this morning.
Look, I think it's really interesting, isn't it? That so she makes the point, I mean, her documentary is obviously she's a wildlife campaigner, and William and Harry are both wildlife campaigners. And she makes the point in the interview that, you know, that they are champions of the natural world. And she interjects during the interview and says, yes, except they hunt and shoot. And then she goes on to say, but I think Harry will stop because Meghan doesn't like hunting. So I suspect that is over for him. Now, the way she's positioned that is that he's a naughty boy doing the wrong thing, and his right-on wife is the one that's stepping in. I don't think that's a good look. I mean, Harry in the past has been previously condemned for images that show him. There was one in 2004, showed him next to the body of a water buffalo that he'd shot dead. And then back in 2014, he and William went to Spain on a deer and wild boar hunting trip, at the same time as the Duke of Cambridge launched an appeal to stop illegal hunting of wildlife. So they've been called out on it before. I think she's using this opportunity to send a deeper message to people who do hunt that it's not the right thing to do. But in bringing Meghan and Harry into it, of course, she's shone a spotlight on them at a time when they do not want to be in the public eye. So really interesting timing. I don't imagine she's had their permission. And I think the word challenging pretty much does sum up what life must be like for him right now.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you completely. It's so hard for everyone, and as you say, let alone Harry being on the other side of the world.
And it must be also hard, Zoe, seeing the rest of the royal family being so engaged with the nation. We saw the Queen twice in a week, once on video, once on audio, both on a Sunday, deliver a message to the nation, a really important message, a message that was widely regarded to be spot on, Churchillian in tone, very calming. I mean, the Queen is this sort of figure of certainty and constancy in a very uncertain world. And that's, in fact, what the royal family, you know, from the top to the bottom stand for. They are an institution that people hold on to in times of challenge and, you know, in times of upset. I mean, there's a lot of people in grief. They haven't been with their loved ones as they've died. And someone like the Queen, who's reigned for 68 years and has lived through wars and all sorts of international disasters and catastrophes, you know, her Easter message was, you know, we will prevail. There will still be light and love, and you know, she's so purposeful. And there's Harry, you know, petulantly with his wife sort of sloping off from the royal family when they could really be making a difference. And it's pretty hard for them to prosecute anything they want to do right now without being seen to be attention seeking.
In that vein, I mean, we've also heard reports that Meghan and Harry may do a tell-all interview, which I don't personally think is such a good idea. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm common sense tells me that this isn't the right thing for them to do. I mean, yes, you're absolutely right. It's been touted that they would be paid $1 million, which doesn't seem a lot really, but I know it does seem a lot, but for an interview of that magnitude, oh my gosh, you're so right. If they were to sit down with Oprah or the like, and I'm presuming it would be someone like Oprah because, of course, Meghan is friends with Oprah and as is Doria Raglan, her mum, and to speak at all in any detail about the royal family and to do an interview, you would have to have some elements of that about what that was like. There is no way it would be car crash, Prince Andrew style interview, part two. Now, I know that, you know, you have to presume that Meghan would be coming at it from the perspective of Diana's interview with Martin Bashir, you know, that kind of, I was a victim style interview. I don't know if she would do it that way, but if she did, she would be absolutely hammered, because while the public had affection for Diana because the three in the marriage scenario with Charles and Camilla, I don't think there is that depth of affection for Meghan. I mean, she was in the royal family for a blink before she was out of it. And, you know, that lack of constancy, staying power is right now juxtaposed against what the Queen's doing, what William and Kate are doing, what Charles and Camilla are doing. I think anything that they said in an interview would go down so badly.
Oh, yes, I agree with you. But one thing that they might want to explain, though, is why they snubbed a special Australian offer, do you think?
That's right, Zoe. They have a massive snub to Australia. So what happened is the Rural Fire Service has come out and revealed that they wanted to call an air tanker after Archie. These are the air tankers that were so useful during the bushfires, that, you know, the ones that were dropping water. Now, the reason they wanted to call this new air tanker Archie was because, of course, Meghan announced her pregnancy when the couple were in Australia, and they thought it would be a lovely thing that when Archie grew up, he could come to Australia and see his namesake. Anyway, they wrote to Harry and Meghan and asked if it would be okay for the name to be on the side of the plane. I mean, we're not talking a commercial plane or a helicopter service or anything like that. We are talking, you know, a firefighting vehicle. And they said no. They said he had not yet entered public life, and nope, they couldn't use the name. This, of course, the same week that Harry and Meghan announced that they're using the name Archwell as their new corporate charity institution that they've set up. So they're happy to repurpose his name and the meaning of that name in their own endeavours. And yet when a very and remember, Kate and William were going to come out and visit after the bushfires to show their support to Australia. And here's Harry and Meghan not letting a plane be named after their son. I mean, it's so petulant and unnecessary. Does it harm him? I don't think it harms him at all to have a plane named after him. In fact,
I'm sure a little boy would love to have a plane named after them.
Exactly. And then you can tell the story of what this plane does and why the royal family is, you know, why, you know, how we're part of the Commonwealth. I mean, it's a lesson in history for their child and something very special. Well, instead, the Rural Fire Service decided to name it after Marie Bashir, the first female governor of New South Wales. And she came out and said that she was hugely humbled by the decision, which is exactly what Prince Harry and Meghan should really have said at that offer. Very precious, not in the spirit of the times, and they seem to be getting it really wrong at the moment. And I think this will continue to happen. They now have celebrity management, not royal management, and those are two completely different things. And I think Harry's the one that's going to miss out. He's going to be the one that's repositioned away from being somebody whose relevance and purposefulness is very important on the world stage to this kind of Meghan brand of kind of pseudo-royal positioning. I mean, she's going back into celebrity land with, you know, interviews, with saying no to this and yes to that and Disney programs and that sort of thing. It's not what the royals are. No one's saying that they can't break away and have a more private life, but I think the management of their projects is paramount. They have to get that right, and they have to get the messaging around it right. Right now they're not.
There's another family making a difference during coronavirus, isn't there?
What's your names?
My name's Harris.
Hello, Harris.
Hi, Harris.
My name's Lloyd.
Lloyd, hi.
Hi, Lloyd. Very nice to meet you. I'm Catherine, and this is William next to me. And are you holding out pictures of your mummies and daddies?
This is a picture of my mum.
Oh, look, the Cambridges are amazing, don't you think, Zoe? It's almost like they've come into their own. Everything from their children clapping to the beautiful picture of Kensington Palace, the front lawn covered in daffodils, which was just a beautiful thing to share. I mean, every week we saw that lovely Instagram post with Kate in a, you know, beautiful yellow jumper and William talking to the children of frontline workers. It was natural, it was warm, you know, it was informative. And then, of course, just in the last couple of days, we've seen William, through his role as the patron of the National Emergencies Trust, speak to small charities who are helping disabled people and people that are struggling with lots and lots of projects that they're working on. Now, this trust was set up only last month. William is driving it. It's already raised $25 million, which is going out into the communities to keep people working, to keep vegetables supplied to people, all sorts of good things. He checked in with a couple of the charities, and they were really, I mean, they weren't pompous. They were just one caring person to another having a chat about what they're doing and bringing awareness to these charities.
And where are you, Jackie, exactly?
So Goole, which is in the East Riding of Yorkshire.
And Jackie, how has the NET helped you?
I mean, he is really spearheading the royal families, along with the Queen. It's really spearheading their response. And as I said earlier, you know, they are more relevant than they've been in a long while, because right now people turn to that sort of sense of stability and solidness that they need. I'm doing a remarkable job. And I loved that video. Kate, she sort of said, oh, I'm Catherine and this is William. And I love the way that it gave you an insight as to what she must be like at home. I think she's supremely organized. I think she's the boss in the relationship because she sort of led the conversation, but in a nice way. I mean, in that sort of, you know, mother of three children, does 50 million things a day and has a really, really strong connection to not just her own children, but to other people's children as well. The way she speaks to children, I think it's instinctive and very warm.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely loved that interview. And I even liked the little teasing nudge she gave William saying he's eating all the Easter eggs.
Yeah, I know. It's just normal. I love that. And I think the other thing is we think about who they are and what they're doing, but the fact that these two are bringing up the next heir to the throne, you can imagine that in the same way that Diana brought up Harry and William to visit homeless charities and AIDS patients, and you can see that that act of service now being born through in William's work, you can imagine that even a generation on from that, the work that Kate and William do and the fact they talk to their children about this sort of work means that they, as royals, a new generation of royals, will have that same act of service and sense of duty that has, you know, been passed down from the Queen.
Yeah, of course. And speaking of kind of royals' duty, bizarrely, we've also seen some images of Prince Andrew working for the first time since, you know, that interview.
That's right, that interview back in November last year. I mean, we've not seen Andrew at all. This is really interesting, Zoe. So there's some images on Sarah Ferguson and Prince Andrew and Princess Eugenie and her husband, Jack Brooksbank. They're all living together through the coronavirus crisis, and they're all doing a lot of charity work. And very tentatively, Fergie herself didn't put up these pictures, but her personal assistant did. And it was pictures of her and Andrew packing these pink bags with cupcakes and sandwiches and toiletries for hospice workers, and then they're delivering them to them. Now, you can see how cautiously this is being done. If Sarah had posted those images herself, she would be seen to be grandstanding. Andrew, of course, could post them. So there were sort of, how would you describe them? It was a careful ploy so that it wasn't being seen to them there was no sense of self-congratulation in what they were doing. But it was clear that Fergie wanted it to be seen, and Andrew probably as well, that they were involved in the coronavirus effort. What did I make of it? I thought, look, I'm a skeptic, and I think that he needs to lay low. Good on him if he's packing a few cupcakes, but why is he doing it? I don't know. We know he's not been doing any royal work since that interview, and that investigation was obviously still pending. We don't know, obviously prosecutors and things can't get on with that work on that case at the moment, but we know there's still a lot to run on that before there's any kind of conclusive ending to it. So a very bizarre, interesting thing for her to post through her personal assistant, but it just felt a bit icky to me, even still.
I know what you mean, but, at least he's doing his bit.
No, I want the truth on Prince Andrew.
Of course, though, poor Princess Beatrice. This wedding is definitely not going to plan, but now there's been calls for her to change them. What's that about?
Well, as we know, she's due to get married on May 29. She's made no official comment on what is actually happening, whether that wedding's going ahead or not. Certainly the party at Buckingham Palace, of course, is not happening because the UK is in lockdown. She hasn't said whether she's going to marry or not, but there's strong calls now and some suggestion that she's talking behind the scenes about making the wedding next year and making it bigger and more more of a sense of occasion than she had anticipated, basically to boost morale among the British, but also I imagine globally. So whether or not that will happen, we don't know. Of course, she hasn't been able to go ahead with these wedding plans. Her fiance is Italian. The Italians have been highly, all his family would have been affected by the lockdown in Italy. So the wedding, poor thing. She's really She's really missed out. But I think it would be lovely. She is a private person, much more so than Princess Eugenie. But I do hope that, I hope there is a lovely wedding at the end of this. And I do hope they maybe it is a bit more glamorous and maybe she does share a bit more than she intended to. I think it would be lovely if that happened.
I think so too, because the public do need that little morale boost as well, which a wedding always brings.
That's true. And also I think it just for their family, the Yorks, I mean, they've before coronavirus, they've been, as we were just discussing, Prince Andrew, there's been a lot happening there. I think a good news story for that family would be very necessary. I mean, neither of those girls are in any way, that they have nothing to do with this court case that's going on around their dad. But unfortunately, they've been incredibly besmirched by it, and that's a real sadness. I hope Prince, I really do hope Beatrice has a lovely wedding. She gets on with being a stepmother and presumably will want children herself.
Exactly, so do I. Now, finally, Camilla has shared something really special. What is it?
Well, as a reader myself, Zoe, I love the fact that she's done this. And Camilla's just nailing it. She's talked about domestic violence victims. She's been very caring in her approach during coronavirus. But I really like this. So there's a picture of her sitting on the steps in jeans and a jumper at Birk Hall in Scotland, where the two of them were both, she and Charles were both self-isolating. And the pictures of her completely engrossed in a book. And she's decided to share through their social media channels her reading list. And I think she's done this because she's been speaking, I think we spoke about it last week, she's been doing these one-on-one chats with people who are living alone and are lonely. And through those chats, she's talked a lot about books that she's been reading. Anyway, she's published this list of books that she says that she's enjoyed and that she thought others might enjoy reading as well. So she put up this list, and it includes Charles Dickens' A Tale of Two Cities, The Cazalet Chronicles by Elizabeth Jane Howard, which she's described as the one that the chronicles that would keep her company on a deserted island. She's also included Restless by William Boyd, a modern author, A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles, The Red Notebook by Antoine Lorraine, and The Architect's Apprentice by Elif Shavat. So these are, I mean, massive variation in her recommendations. I love it. But the last book that she recommended was a book written by her late brother Mark Shand, who died in 2014, and that was Travels on My Elephant. And she said, my late brother's tale of his love affair with Tara, an Asian elephant, on their journey across India, it always brings a tear to my eye. And then she went on to say that so many of us are finding comfort in reading, and that Ernest Hemingway famously said, there is no friend as loyal as a book. I completely agree with her at the moment. I'm loving getting out of my own story and getting into another story every night when I go to bed. What about you, Zoe?
Oh, yes, exactly. Well, I've just finished a book, so I listened to that list you just mentioned. I might have to go and pick up one of those.
And what was your book you just finished?
Oh, Where the Crawdads Sing.
Oh, I've heard that's brilliant. That's
yes.
Brilliant. Is it good?
Yes, you must pick up a copy.
Oh, excellent. Okay, that's my next one. Fleischman is in trouble. Have
Perfect.
You read that?
No, I haven't.
Oh, that's great too. So there's our recommendations. We've added to some, just basically you, me and Camilla, Zoe.
Exactly. There you go. And everyone else can follow along and read with us.
Sounds great.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Ange.
Thanks, Zoe. Talk again soon.
And thank you to everyone for listening. For more on the Royals, please go to newidea.com.au or our Facebook page, New Idea Royals. And of course, don't forget to pick up a copy of New Idea Royals Monthly on sale now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.